I'd like now to welcome to the program Meejin Cha. She is a senior policy analyst with the Sustainable Progress Initiative at Demos in New York, and Robert Repetto. He's a senior fellow in the Climate Energy Program at the United Nations Foundation. He's author of the book America's Climate Problem, The Way Forward, and he's author of the new report, New Mexico's Rising Economic Risks from Climate Change. Welcome, both of you, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you,
Mary Charlotte.
So first of all, let's talk about the present impact of climate change. New Mexico's temperatures have been rising more rapidly than the average global temperature. What does this look like and why is it happening?
Well, it's happening because climate change in the southwestern states is more intense than in many other parts of the country. And the underlying cause, of course, is the increasing concentration of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere.
But why New Mexico? In other words, how much has our temperature risen? And do we, we don't have more greenhouse gas over New Mexico, yet we have considerably higher temperatures.
Yes, considerably higher temperatures and also more intense patterns of precipitation. The frequency with which extreme events occur, such as the heat waves and the drought, rises disproportionately as the average global temperature. And unfortunately, New Mexico is extremely vulnerable to these extreme weather events because, of course, it lies in a semi-arid area in the first place.
So talk about our water supply and precipitation patterns. What does it look like currently? I mean, I was amazed to read in your report how much the aquifer that feeds Albuquerque has fallen in my lifetime. What does our water supply look like and how is it projected to change?
Well, of course, New Mexico is always a water-stressed area. But global warming is making those stresses much, much worse. More of the annual precipitation is falling as rain rather than snow in the mountains. And because of higher temperatures, it's running off earlier in the year, which means that there's less storage in the reservoirs. At the same time, the increasing heat means that more water is evaporating from soils, from plants, from reservoirs. And so the amount that runs down into the rivers for irrigation during the summer months is considerably less. And all that goes to exacerbate the water stress that New Mexico has dealt with for decades. The cities, as you know, have been taking extreme measures to compensate, restricting water use, raising water rates, implementing programs to conserve more water. And at the same time, the rural sector, the agricultural sector is, and ranching are suffering badly because of the lack of water.
So those water conservation programs, I mean, here in Santa Fe, we have a rule about low-flow toilets and an exchange program, and we've made a really big difference. If everybody did that, would that be enough?
It certainly would help, and you're right. Santa Fe and Albuquerque and other cities have had to make a big effort, but as time goes on and these stresses become worse, what's going to have to happen is more water is going to have to be transferred out of the rural sector, where most of the consumptive use is. And that is going to devastate rural communities.
My understanding is that if you look at New Mexico, or really if you look at almost any place in the whole world, the agricultural sector uses 80 to 90% of all water, and residential and urban use and industrial use is everything else. So the agricultural sector really takes the lion's share of water. Are there not better ways of water use, of conserving water in that sector?
Yes, to some extent, but many farmers and ranchers have already been implementing those kinds of measures, and there are limits to what can be done. The crops need water, livestock need to be watered, and the kinds of changes that are imminent are not ones that can easily be accommodated just by measures to conserve more water in the rural sector. They're going to be very serious adjustments, and you can already see that throughout the Southwest. In this drought, farmers are having to sell off their herds because either the feed costs are too high or there's just no feed available.
We're talking about the report, New Mexico's Rising Economic Risks from Climate Change. So let's talk about, you're talking about ranching right now, let's talk about the various economic impacts of higher temperatures and less water on New Mexico. What about just simply homeowners? What does this mean for the residents, the homeowners of New Mexico?
It depends largely on where they are. The homeowners who live in the urban fringe or in forested areas are at increasing risk from fire, as you know. Not only that, the combination of heat, drought, and bark beetle infestations are devastating the forests of New Mexico and neighboring states. And that's a loss not only of an important amenity for homeowners, but it imposes an economic loss as well because it affects their property values. At the same time, in the urban areas, as you probably experienced yourself in Santa Fe, these heat waves are exacerbated by the urban heat island because there's so much concrete. And there are real health impacts on the urban population. Three out of the five leading causes of death in New Mexico are exacerbated by this increasing heat. That's heart disease and stroke and respiratory disease. Whenever you have these episodes of extreme heat, more people die. More people go to the emergency room. And that's an increasing health burden from climate change that New Mexico is facing.
I mean, when we talk about the economic impacts of climate change and we start talking about health, I think it's important to also just see this not even as an economic impact, which it is, because when you have a sicker population, that population spends more on health, but it's just basically a human loss. It's like a human quality of life thing. If we're getting sick from our environment, that's above and beyond just money.
Absolutely. And, you know, it affects some parts of the population disproportionately. Children, for example, have a rising incidence of asthma, and the deteriorating air quality exacerbates those asthma attacks and those kids end up in the emergency room. And almost a half of New Mexico's population depends for health care either on Medicaid or they have no health insurance at all, and they depend on trips to the emergency room. And these segments of the population are the most vulnerable, and it puts the increasing pressure on the state's health budget to cope with these increasing demands that on the health system that climate change is bringing.
And I'd like to add that, you know, beyond just health costs, climate change and the impacts, particularly in New Mexico, will have a disproportionate impact on folks on low-income communities because of the increased costs on a personal level, like increased electricity costs for more air conditioning, and these really impact low-income and economically insecure communities already.
So we've talked about wildfires and agriculture and cities. What about the economic impact on New Mexico's tourism economy? We've got both urban and countryside, rural-based tourism. What do those look like in the projected future in regard to climate change?
Well, that's a good question, because tourism is a very important sector in New Mexico, and the impacts are going to be almost totally unfavorable on tourism. I mean, we can start in the winter. You know, there's going to be less snow in the mountains, and the ski season is going to be shorter. So a lot of visitors who come to Taos Ski Valley or other areas in the winter are going to be going elsewhere. And in the summer months, there are lots and lots of visitors come to New Mexico to fish up in the mountains, and the fishing is going to be worse because trout don't tolerate higher water temperatures, and if the streams are full of ash from forest fires, that will put an end to fishing on those stretches of river. People who come south in New Mexico for bird watching will be disappointed, because as the climate changes, the ranges of those birds will change, and many of them will migrate further north. So those wonderful wildlife areas in southern New Mexico will no longer attract all of those visitors. Another important sector for New Mexico is the arts sector. In Santa Fe, for example, it's no fun walking up Canyon Road visiting galleries when it's 105, 110 out.
Right.
So it's going to have an impact on that very important arts sector in Taos and Santa Fe and other cities. And as a matter of fact, it will likely to have an effect on the artists and craftspeople themselves. People came to New Mexico originally a half century ago or more because it offered not only beautiful scenery, but a wonderful climate and picturesque surroundings. But artists are a footloose tribe. You know, the next generation of artists could just as easily go somewhere else.
Well, and really, this generation of artists, a lot of them have already gone somewhere else because the cost of living here has gone up so much because of real estate costs. And that's another thing that climate change affects, is the cost of living just through energy and water prices. What does that look like?
Well, that's true. You know, people who are reluctant to do anything about climate change are afraid that doing so would raise their energy costs. But if nothing is done, energy costs are going to rise for several reasons. In the first place, there's going to be less opportunity for low-cost hydroelectric power because reservoir levels will be down. The deteriorating air quality will put New Mexico's coal-fired power plants at odds with air quality regulations, and they will have to spend tens and hundreds of millions of dollars to upgrade their pollution control equipment. The higher peak summer temperatures will require the utilities to run the least efficient power plants in the summer months more intensively, and that's going to raise peak power rates and electricity costs in those months. So for a whole set of reasons, climate change is going to raise electricity costs in New Mexico. New Mexico, fortunately, has a very attractive alternative. Not only are there ample reserves of natural gas, but the potential in New Mexico for generating wind power and solar power is enormous, while among the highest potential resources in the country. So an alternative energy strategy that's based first on energy conservation and then on the use of natural gas along with renewable energy would actually help to keep New Mexico's energy costs stable.
What about the issue of hydraulic fracturing, which is something that a lot of people are extremely worried about. I mean, that goes hand in hand with natural gas production.
Absolutely. And, of course, that sort of development has to be done responsibly. There have been booms in fracking all over the country, and it's run out ahead of the development of standards and regulations. And so it's naturally important that if this kind of gas extraction is going to be done, it has to be done in a safe and responsible way.
And Mary Charlotte, I would add that natural gas is always seen as a bridge between coal to renewable energy. And I always think that, in fact, New Mexico has a 20% renewable energy mandate by 2020. So the investment and pushing of renewables is a much stronger policy. And then just using natural gas as a bridge between what we have now, a fossil fuel, carbon-based economy, into a green economy.
Meejin, how have Governor Bill Richardson and then Governor Susana Martinez, how have their administrations responded to this whole issue of climate change and energy development?
Well, unfortunately, it couldn't be more different. You know, Governor Richardson was really forward-thinking, both in terms of a strong renewable energy mandate, but also in terms of trying to cap greenhouse gases in the state and really pushing very positive climate policies. And as you know, Governor Martinez has basically done all she can to reverse all of that. And even, you know, after being rebuked by the court, she then went ahead and replaced all the members of the New Mexico Environmental Improvement Board to repeal the cap on greenhouse gases. So to be honest, I think that is one of the biggest challenges facing New Mexico, is how to stop this administration not only from reversing policies, but implementing policies that could be more harmful in the long run.
They think that what they're doing is right. And to anybody who's looking at climate change, it's almost as if they think it doesn't exist. What is going on?
Well, I think the problem starts with the governor, to be honest. I think she's publicly stated that she doesn't really see the link between man-made greenhouse gas emissions and climate change. And, you know, it's somewhat shocking that she can still believe this given the devastation that the state faced after the summer's forest fires. But I still think, you know, there's a really strong advocacy group, advocacy sector in New Mexico, including our partners, the New Mexico Environmental Law Center and Amigos Bravos, that are doing amazing work on the ground. And the more support that they can receive and the more advocacy support and public support they receive, I think can help start countering the governor and some of her actions.
Robert, you've written this book, America's Climate Problem, The Way Forward. When you look in New Mexico specifically, what do you think is the way forward for us?
Well, the way forward is not over technological obstacles at this point. It's a political problem. And Meejin has illustrated that. In New Mexico, the current administration is at odds with its own scientists. And it's ironic that New Mexico has these national labs that have been doing excellent work on the whole issue of climate change, and yet this administration is in denial. So that's the main problem. It's unfortunate that it takes extreme weather events like those that are being experienced just as we speak for people to essentially become sensitive and wake up to the implications of climate change. And unfortunately, it's still very fragmentary and incomplete. People don't understand that what we're experiencing now is the reflection of increases in greenhouse gases that took place two decades ago, because there are these lags in the way that the climate system globally responds. So it's just going to get worse. And unless our elected officials at every level, national, state, and local, find the wisdom and courage within themselves to address this problem and embrace some of the solutions that are available, then the people of New Mexico and elsewhere in the Southwest, elsewhere in the nation, elsewhere in the globe, are facing disaster.
Now, there's a deeper issue here when I look at the really big picture, which is that, okay, we ordinary people, probably the three of us speaking and most of our listeners, maybe all of our listeners, expect to live what even 50 years ago would have been considered super luxury lifestyles. Temperature control around us, travel, bathing every single day. And the whole notion of growth, economic growth, is going pretty much unchallenged when economic growth and these ever-improving nice lifestyles that we have, which I'm not complaining about, I like it, but they're the crux of the problem. How do you deal with that?
I think you're absolutely right, Mary Charlotte, and I think that is probably one of the reasons why climate change is so difficult for people to kind of grasp, is that it will really take a dramatic change in our lifestyles. At the same time, I think there are things that you could do on a national policy level that would help to move this in the right direction. You know, for one, what you just mentioned about economic growth is absolutely correct. You know, our main measure of growth is GDP, but GDP doesn't take into consideration things like ecosystem services or the costs that we'll have to face by replacing our infrastructure due to climate policies. And the impact of that is that it doesn't provide any financial incentive for business and the private sector to engage in these environmentally beneficial things. So if we start to expand our accounting system to kind of start putting a price on how much we value our natural resources and how much they give back, then it starts to become financially beneficial to protect them and preserve them. But I do agree that it will start to take us, it will take a big mind shift and lifestyle shift.
I'd like to add a bit to that, because my career has been as an economist working on environmental issues. And I have done a lot of studies, and my colleagues in the field have done a lot of studies addressing the question, what would be the impacts on the economy if we take the steps necessary to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by a large amount? And by a large amount, I mean something like 80% over a half century. The answer that we all come to is that it will have virtually no impact on our prosperity as a nation or our standard of living. And there's a very simple reason for that. The cost differential between renewable energy and, you know, dirty energy has been narrowing year by year. And if all of the costs of dirty energy were taken into account, as Meejin says, the costs of pollution and illness and so on, that differential would actually disappear. So that if we switched from dirty energy to clean energy, it would make no difference. It would make very little difference to our standard of living. You know, people really don't know or care where their electricity is coming from as long as the lights go on when they turn the switch. People really don't care what's under the hood of their car as long as the car runs well and gets good gas mileage. So if we make this switch from dirty energy to clean energy, we'll be able to maintain our standard of living, and at the same time, we'll be much better off because we will have limited all of the disastrous effects of climate change on our health, on our economy, on the natural environment.
Just to clarify, I don't think that our standard of living needs to decrease. I think our consumption patterns need to decrease. If we consumed energy at the same level that folks in Europe consume, we would actually be a net energy exporter. And I think that some of this thinking does have to start to permeate into individuals' mindsets, that we just waste too much.
Meejin Cha is a senior policy analyst with the Sustainable Progress Initiative at Demos, and Robert Repetto is a senior fellow in the Climate Energy Program at the United Nations Foundation. He's the author of the book America's Climate Problem, The Way Forward, and of the report New Mexico's Rising Economic Risks from Climate Change. Anything either one of you wants to add before we go?
Mary Charlotte, thank you so much for having us on. And there are steps that can be taken to fight this climate battle. I think New Mexico has set some really great fundamentals, and it's just a question of making sure that they get extended.
Well, thank you very much for being on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you.